It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. President Trump is labeling an elite Iranian military group as a terrorist organization, a move that's getting mixed reviews inside his administration. We'll find out what the announcement means coming up. Now, the 15th annual State of the Tribes address was delivered at the state capitol this afternoon. The address brings together the 11 federally recognized tribes of Wisconsin. It was delivered this year by Oneida Chairman Tahasi Hill. Chairman Hill's address covered a wide range of topics, including education, mining, climate change, the opioid crisis, and how tribal governments can work with the state on those and other issues. Aaron Bird Bear is an assistant dean for student diversity programs for the UW-Madison School of Education. He is Mandan, Hidatsa, and Diné, and a tribally enrolled citizen of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. He was a principal architect of WisconsinFirstNations.org, a partnership between the School of Education and Wisconsin Public Television. Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, honey, chata hi, P. I'm happy to be here. Said hello in the Ho-Chunk language.
And you were at the Capitol today to attend the address. Can you set the scene for us, Aaron?
Yeah, it's an incredibly special event where we have, walking into the beginning of the event, we have drums singing some honor songs. So having this incredible cultural expression within the Capitol Dome is a meaningful moment, at least for me. And then we have the Eagle Staffs, which represent the different First Nations of Wisconsin. They're kind of the equivalent of the American flag that we have that represents our nation. And so having the Eagle Staff enter the combined Senate and Assembly floor, along with the United States colors, is an extraordinarily powerful moment to see this nation-to-nation relationship between the First Nations of Wisconsin, the United States, and the Wisconsin state government.
We'll get into some of the details of Chairman Hill's address, but overall, what struck you about what he had to say to state lawmakers and the governor?
It's just a really positive moment to think about the ways that we can collaborate and support one another. First Nations of Wisconsin offer all sorts of services that serve Native Americans and non-Native Americans alike. And similarly, the various services of the state government in Wisconsin serves Native Americans and non-Native Americans alike. So it's just a wonderful, positive moment to think about the ways that both governments of the First Nations of Wisconsin and the state government can hopefully provide the best services to the citizens of the state.
Can you talk a little bit about the interaction between those governments? Here in Wisconsin and in other states, you have the state government, the tribal governments, federal government laws affect both of those differently. It can get kind of complicated, right?
It is. In 2004, then-Governor Jim Doyle issued Executive Order 39. Executive orders come and go. But at the time, it really provided a basic guidance for how cabinet agencies will recognize the unique legal relationship between the state of Wisconsin and the Indian nations and respect fundamental principles that establish and maintain these relationships. And so it's just a wonderful system of liaising where all these tribal liaisons within state government, say Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, and how they can coordinate their service efforts together. And so I think it's just a really amazing kind of moment in the 21st century where the Wisconsin government is proactively seeking to establish better services for citizenry through collaboration with the governments of the First Nations.
I think you said the executive order was 2004, and this is the 15th State of the Tribe address. Were the two related? Am I doing the math right there?
They are. Executive Order 39 kind of launched the State of the Tribes initiative in the sense that this address kind of talks about what are the priorities of First Nations in the state and how what areas are we doing well and what areas do we have areas for growth within. So I think it's really amazing that this executive order established in the 21st century this unprecedented era of cooperation between Native Americans and non-Native Americans that we've never seen in the history of our country. And it's just a very visible reminder of this new era of collaboration and cooperation.
And a little more about the history of the address itself. It's delivered by a rotating group, right, of the leaders of the various tribal nations around the state?
That's correct. Every year, a different leader, one of the civic leaders of the First Nations of Wisconsin, is selected to deliver the address. A couple years ago, Gary Bisaw, the president of the Nominee Nation. Previous year's Chris McGeesick from St. Croix. So it's been wonderful to see the different perspectives and ways of communicating that these First Nation leaders share with us, the public, and the elected representatives of the state of Wisconsin's government.
Talking to Aaron Bird-Bear from the UW-Madison, looking at today's State of the Tribes address delivered before the state legislature and the governor today. Want to get into some of the particulars. A big part of the address focused on issues related to the environment, climate change, and mining and water health. Here is the chairman talking about that.
Protecting high-quality environmental resources and repairing damage is not a political policy. It is a responsibility.
A big part of the address, as I mentioned, related to the environment. Can you talk about some of what Chairman Hill had to say?
Yeah, the really important component for First Nations is, since we've been here for 12,000-plus years in this particular part of Turtle Island, or what people call North America or the United States, that protecting that environment is something that's really important to us, because we value not only ourselves as human beings on planet Earth, but we also value all the living beings, plants and animals. We want to ensure that we adhere to this compact we made with nature to sustain it in a vibrant and healthy way, so that not only do we have a high quality of life as human beings, but the plants have a high quality of life, the animals have a high quality of life. So in this compact with nature, protecting the environment is just a really important component of sustaining that compact. So, say, all this mining that has been attempted in the state of Wisconsin over the last 20 years in particular, these multinational conglomerates come in and there are resources to extract, but they come with incredible harm to the environment. And so the type of leach mining with different chemicals is going to contaminate watersheds and water basins. And so that compact of nature would be definitely violated in some sense to the incredible harm that comes with this mining and all the chemicals that are placed in the land. So it's been really impressive to see the First Nations of Wisconsin, particularly those of the North, who've been successful in pushing back mining effort after mining effort. And in particular, the most recent ones, the Menominee Nation and the Back 40 mine, which would actually occur right where the Menominee's creation story says they come to be as a people. And so here is a Menominee Nation fighting for the protection of the environment where their origin story says they came to be. And so I think it's very important to sustain the health of this environment in places that are so important to the First Nations of Wisconsin.
And in additionally, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Chairman Hill, in his address, talked about some of the particular mining projects you just mentioned. He also focused on bigger picture environmental issues like climate change. And he was encouraging the state of Wisconsin and tribal groups to work together on climate change issues. Can you talk about that focus?
Yeah, I think First Nations are an incredible kind of litmus. I mean, we're some ways canary in the coal mine about climate change. You know, our ways of being, our cultures, our languages are all shaped from interacting so intimately with the environment over thousands of years. So our knowledge bases and our understanding of this environment are just go back generation after generation after generation. And with climate change, changing the behavior of plants, changing the behavior of the environment in relation to water, suddenly harvesting wild rice was an issue in the last few years. Wild rice requires extraordinarily clean water and extraordinarily stable water levels. And so wild rice harvests in northern Wisconsin have been interrupted by climate change. The Alaska Native Nations, they have been experiencing this for 20-plus years already. Climate change has impacted them so quickly. And so I think First Nations have just an amazing window into how quickly climate change is impacting our ways of being. And it's an interest of First Nations to collaborate with science and with government to find ways to mitigate these changes for the well-being of all plants and animals.
Now, there's, of course, a lot of diversity among Wisconsin's tribal nations and First Nations around the continent, but I've seen people talking about a growing common interest, growing cooperation between various nations on environmental issues. Do you see this as a rising movement, a trend we should be watching?
Yeah, I see this incredible, you know, social movement coming our way, because as water becomes a more and more precious resource, and as disruption to agricultural crops and different things are going to force us to reconcile our behaviors as human beings on planet Earth, I think the Native American nations are dedicated to thinking about how we can contribute to adaptation. The National Adaptation Forum will be here in Madison in later this April. And the First Nations presentations within the National Adaptation Forum are incredibly deep. So we have these First Nations from around the United States and from the First Nations of Wisconsin all coming together to think about what are the behavior changes we can think about to help mitigate climate change impacts that are caused by our behaviors as human beings. So I think it's an exciting time for innovation, for science and First Nations to all collaborate together to think about how we can continue to have healthy lives for our children, our children's children, and seven generations down the road.
We're talking to Aaron Bird Bear right now, Assistant Dean for Student Diversity Programs at UW-Madison School of Education, with us today to talk about the annual State of the Tribes Address delivered today by Oneida Chairman Tahasi Hill. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What were some of your takeaways from today's speech? We'll cover a lot of the issues apart from the environment coming up. What would you like to hear more about? If you're a member of a Wisconsin tribe, what issues are you focusing on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time. I'm WPR. We continue our conversation about today's State of the Tribes Address. Aaron Bird Bear is with us from the UW-Madison, Principal Architect of WisconsinFirstNations.org. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you listen or watch today's address? What did you think of what you heard? If you're a member of one of Wisconsin's tribes, what would you like to see addressed in the state moving forward? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Chairman Hill used some of his address to look at education. I want to look at Act 31 that requires public school districts to provide instruction on tribal history and sovereignty. And Chairman Hill talking about a proposed change in that I think he liked. Here's a listen.
Our amendments to Act 31 must teach that we, as Native people, are alive, vibrant, and thriving. Our cultures are alive, vibrant, and thriving.
Aaron, can you talk about that act, what it did, and what could change?
Yeah, the Act 31 was born in the 1989-1991 biennium budget. And we always say that, you know, new educational policies just don't drop out of the sky. There was a really unfortunate conflict and a misunderstanding of treaty rights in the state of Wisconsin. Treaties are made nation to nation. Native Americans are in constitutional law, Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. And so, unfortunately, there's a misunderstanding of treaty rights, and there was a conflict over resources in northern Wisconsin, particularly walleye fish. And it led to a four-year prolonged violent confrontation in northern Wisconsin where the National Guard eventually had to be enacted to quell the civil unrest. And because of that, we realized we needed to have an expectation to understand the ways of being of First Nations, the treaty rights within ceded lands. And so this educational expectation emerged to educate about Native Americans at least twice in elementary, at least once in high school, to teach treaty rights, to teach the history, culture, and tribal sovereignty of the First Nations of Wisconsin and all public schools. It is an unfunded and unenforced mandate. And unfortunately, with the testing pressures that all public school teachers and administrators face today, social studies, for the most part, has been pushed to the margins of instruction, with quantitative and English and writing being more prominently tested. And within that, teaching about Native Americans has also been kind of pushed to the side, like parsley on the plate. And so I think there's a sincere interest for thinking how we can embed the instruction of the First Nations throughout every year in high school. So five of the six bills presented to expand Act 31, instead of just being taught at least twice in elementary and at least once in high school, to have a more unified curriculum for teaching this particular expectation and helping teachers understand, you know, what resources are available to them to accomplish this instruction, and well as have a little more instruction instead of just twice and having it more frequently for students to engage this type of learning.
And Chairman Hill also focused on health care and health disparities that face many Native Americans here in Wisconsin. What kind of things was he pointing toward?
We're hoping for thinking about the health care system, which I mentioned treaty-based relationships, you know, in ceding our lands to the United States and its expansion into Turtle Island, or what is called North America. In ceding our lands, the United States, through treaty, is obligated to provide a health care system for us. And he described the chronic underfunding of that healthcare system to a point where Native American healthcare is funded at a third of that of the rest of U.S. citizens. It's even funded at about half of that of what prison inmates receive in terms of healthcare today. And so the disparities we have are historic in the sense that Indian wars, reservation, coercive assimilation of removing children from their families for generations, almost 100 years, has left us with a tremendous amount of chronic issues in health. And so since it's underfunded, we're trying to think of ways that how can the state do actions like the expansion of Medicaid that would really aid tribal citizens to have a better healthcare system to meet their needs in mental health needs, chronic diabetes needs, substance abuse needs. And so it's just really a discussion about, although most of these are federal obligations between the federal government and each Native Nation to provide a healthcare system for each citizen of the First Nation, there are ways that the state can partner with First Nations to help enhance and address the tribal disparities that Native Americans face today.
We're talking about today's State of the Tribes address delivered by UNITA Chairman Ta-Hasi Hill. Aaron Bird Bear is with us. We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Patrick is with us in Richland Center. Patrick, hi.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for your guest. Do you think it's fair to say that since the Republicans have been in charge in Madison, you know, open for business, I'm sure you remember that, the reason that they have taken away just about all the local control over water rights, meaning, you know, high capacity wells, how many of them can be drilled in your neighborhood, and also on the pollution part where, as locals, you can't say anything, have no control over a big business doing a bunch of nasty pollution. Would it be fair to say that the reason that the Republicans enacted that legislation was so that when an multinational, maybe like Foxconn, comes along, they can reassure them, saying, hey, don't worry about the water and the pollution, because the locals, we've taken that right away from a long time ago. And so it makes them easier for them to sell us out.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Aaron, is that a concern people saw, for example, with the mining questions that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I think we as First Nations have watched the United States kind of ebb and flow in its commitments to the environment, commitments to managing natural resources. I think the U.S. government, the U.S. society kind of, you know, oscillates between deregulation and increased regulation for safety and well-being. I think we've just seen a period of deregulation that, you know, obviously enhances business, but often at the cost for all the public in terms of the environment around us and how it's managed. And is it sustainably managed, or is it being managed in a way that the resources are depleting? So we First Nations are in here for the long haul. We've been here for thousands of years. We'll be here for thousands of more. And I think we're just trying to provide our guidance on how we understand these systems and the balance within the ecological systems around us, and what are the best ways we can manage these resources for, you know, the next 12,000 years. My favorite statement, the president of the Menominee Nation said when he visited the UW-Madison campus, and he spoke to our leadership of our campus, he said, the Menominee have been here for 12,000 years. We plan to be here 12,000 more. And I think to be here for 12,000 more, we have to think about balanced ways for managing the environment. And part of that is voting. And we, the public, have to think about what ways that we can elect different leaders who are concerned about the management of the environment. And this, it kind of oscillates back and forth as U.S. society kind of still is a pretty young society, trying to figure out what values are at the center of our society. And yes, we need growth. We need economic sustainability for everyone. At the same time, you know, we can't entirely trash this place because we still have to live here as well.
Patrick, thanks for that call. I want to give another listen to Chairman Hill and his State of the Tribes address here, talking about a legislative focus of the tribes, eliminating the use of Native American logos, mascots, and nicknames in school facilities. Here's a listen.
The use of Indian imagery stereotypes and dehumanizes our cultures and Native American people for the sake of entertainment. Furthermore, it encourages racist and vulgar behavior in the name of school spirit, which is both socially and academically detrimental to all children.
It got some applause from the chamber, but this has been a long running back and forth over the mascot issue. Aaron, what are you watching for as this goes on to yet another year of debate over this?
Well, you know, I'm really hopeful that we listen to the mental health research bodies of the United States. Native American mascots, and particularly in K-12 public education environments, are proven through psychological research to be harmful. They are agents of harm. And as we always describe, if we know that there's an agent of harm impacting youth in educational environments that we control, and we don't care about that, or we choose not to acknowledge the harm that's happening. We can only describe that as institutional racism. And so there's supposed to be equal educational opportunity for all. And the mental health bodies of the United States, the American Psychological Association, the American Counseling Psychology Association, American Sociological Association, they've all issued formal statements on the harm that Native American mascots create in K-12 environments. And so we, elected leaders of the First Nations, are simply saying, yes, we see the harm that's happening, and we hope that we collectively, as the elected leadership of the state, make decisions for the safety and well-being of all youth within the state.
And Aaron, in our last minute or so, we see the State of the Tribes address every year. Do you feel like the messages are heard, or are, you know, is it kind of a people listen politely and go back to their business in state government?
I think it's an extraordinarily important moment for all of us to consider these issues collectively together. So I think people are moved by different aspects of those priorities that the First Nations leaders bring to the attention of the combined Senate and the Assembly. At the same time, people have their own agendas. They're elected to represent different parts of the public, and everybody has different hopes, I think, and dreams to some degree. And hopefully we realize the common issues that impact all of us, and that we can come to a consensus on how we can address those common priorities together. And so I think, for the most part, it's an extraordinarily amazing opportunity for listening about from the perspective of the peoples who've lived here for thousands and thousands of years, and maybe learn something about how we can be here ourselves, our descendants will be here in a few thousand years, and hopefully we've made decisions that they have a high quality of life, just as we have had a pretty high quality of life here in the Western Great Lakes.
Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
That's Aaron Bird Bear, Assistant Dean for Student Diversity Programs for the UW-Madison School of Education, also a Principal Architect of Wisconsin, FirstNations.org. He joins today for a look at the State of the Tribes address delivered earlier today at the state legislature. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.